Mr. Pinder, you asked a very important rhetorical question yesterday, asked it again today, and I think we need to revisit. We were talking about Yusuf Alamaki and the Flames going out and getting a defenseman or whatever. But the question that you threw out, I think, is one that begs some exploration. What is the regular season goal for the Calgary Flames? What does the regular season mean this year for the Calgary Flames? Welcome back, Pat Steinberg, Ryan Pinder, Will Nelt, the OG trio together for a three-day LTO.
There we are.
Last year's 82-game sked exceeded all expectations. They win the Western Conference, second-best regular season in team history. They finished number two overall. But it meant nothing in the postseason, as we all know. They got rolled up and spit out by the Avalanche in five games. I think the mindset, the goals, the overall feel around this team, significantly different for the coming 82 regular season game schedule as 1 year ago. For the first time in a long time, probably for the first time since the year after the missed season, so 05-06 this would have been, this is the first time that the playoffs are really the only thing that matters. The only thing that the regular season counts for, don't miss the playoffs. Don't have an awful regular season. Get in, and then let's see what happens. That's what I feel everybody is going to be looking at and how everybody is going to be approaching this year's regular season.
Would anyone in the Flames fan base be disappointed if they came in as a road team in the first round and won a series?
Probably not.
No, you're in round two.
And if you have to finish as a wild card team, but maybe you win a round or two, I think you take that all day.
So while we'll look at lines, and while we'll talk about how things are going in October, and while we'll mull over what about a waiver claim of this replacement player from this organization, all that matters for this group is to shake off the reputation as a bunch of guys that can't play their best hockey in the spring. And if they don't do that, it doesn't matter if they win the West again. It doesn't matter if they sneak in and get pumped. It's only about their performance in the playoffs. It feels like what Tampa's going to deal with, and it kind of felt like where San Jose was for a number of years. Like,
Washington was there for the longest time until they finally won a cup. Like, St. Louis,
you've
same
won
thing.
Three President's Trophies in a row, Washington. Awesome. We don't care. Show us the money in the playoffs.
Yep.
That's where it's at for this group. So while you might miss Yusuf Alamaki for October, November, December, January, maybe even February, maybe even March, all that matters to this group is how they play in April and beyond, potentially.
I remember a conversation that Lubo, Derek, and I had in the Basement Systems Hot Stove Lounge. It was a pregame show, and it was a game between the Flames and the St. Louis Blues. And I remember the conversation vividly. It was Ken Hitchcock's coaching staff, and one of the assistant coaches was Ray Bennett. And Ray came in and spoke with us, and I think it was a January game, and the Blues were near the top of the Central Division, near the top of the Western Conference. And basically his quote was, all that we are now looking at the rest of the regular season for is being the best prepared for game one of the postseason. So while results still mattered, results weren't the most important thing. The results only mattered to make sure that you're going to get there and be in the postseason, but to be best prepared for game number one. So if that meant sitting players, resting players, playing players over their head, whatever it may be, that's the way the Blues were approaching it. And it's a very, you know, you always like to call me out or call others out on, you know, very touchy-feely, narrative-driven type things. And I feel like that's kind of what that is. When I say the regular season is all about being best prepared for the postseason, I mean it, but I don't really have a tangible way of saying this is what they have to do to make sure it happens. But I think that's the way the Flames are going to be approaching 82 regular season games.
Like, if they're three games over 500 and they're heading into December, like, it just, okay, whatever. Just make sure you're rounding into form as you get into the playoffs. Be good down the stretch. Don't have your top line evaporate for 2 months heading into the playoffs. And don't no-show in the opening round at home. And that sounds harsh, but like, you talk to anyone in this organization that's got any pull and any sort of say in the direction this group's going, last year was an unmitigated disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Greatest regular season they've had since 1989, and there's a sting and a bad taste left from last season because when it mattered, they weren't very good.
Well, and how many, even of the most diehard, glass-half-full positive Flames fans, how many Flames fans are coming back from last season say, yeah, the playoffs suck, but look at how good the regular season was. No, I don't think you're doing that. I think that you can look back and say they accomplished a lot in the regular season, and there were some really positive things, and seeing Rasmus Anderson turn into a bona fide NHLer, seeing Johnny Gaudreau turn into a full-fledged offensive superstar, seeing Derek Ryan progress. There were lots of good things last year, but nobody comes away from that saying, yeah, last year was a success. Even the most positive Flames fan, I think, would say that last year was a failure because of the way things ended. And now you have to make sure that this season is not a failure. So I remember Bill Peters. We were both sitting in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge a couple days after Game 5 against Colorado, and Bill Peters was doing his end-of-the-season press conference. And at one point he said that, yeah, you know what? He'd approach the end of next season in a similar circumstance. He'd approach the end of another season differently than the way he approached this past season. I believe it was Donna Spencer of the Canadian Press who then followed up and said, do you care to expand on what that is? And he said, no, I don't. But I'm curious what that means. Does that mean that he would rest more players? Does that mean that he would ease off on the workload of some players? Does that mean that he would not do that? I don't know what it means, but I found that to be very fascinating and a nice kind of addition to this conversation we're having right now.
Telling you, like, it's that when you the takeaway from last year was not the incredible regular season at all. It was, do we have issues with this core in the playoffs? Is there Gaudreau Monahan playoff issues? Why can't Giordano look like an Norris defenseman in the playoffs when he's done it in the regular season? Where was Matthew Tkachuk beyond game one? What about, you know, look, there's 3-4 guys that met expectations or best of them in the playoffs. Mike Smith was one of them. You could tell me Travis Hamonic was at sea level. Okay.
Sam Bennett
absolutely exceeded expectations. And beyond
maybe Mangiapane.
Maybe.
He didn't really have high expectations.
Valimaki's one. Yeah. But everyone else either disappointed or, you know, vastly disappointed.
Other than Mike Smith, all of the most important positions on the team, Gaudreau, yeah. Monahan, Lindholm, Giordano, Brody, all the most important players on the team, the Tkachuk, the guys that drove them to a 50-win regular season, those guys all had significantly lesser or more negative impacts in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. That's your formula right there for losing in round.
So I think that's what the season's about. I think this team's good enough that they don't have to, you know, place winning the next game ahead of everything else. There needs to be a longer view, and there needs to be a view about how the game changes when we get into the new year and then into March and then, you know, those final weeks of the season where teams are playing for their lives. And then absolutely when the rules change, intensity changes, and you have to beat someone 4 times. That's the area of the sport they didn't look good at.
So I was thinking
they were
about
mediocre down the stretch against a really soft portion of their schedule.
Yeah,
we should have seen it coming, to be honest.
Well, and I was thinking about, okay, if Pinder asks me, okay, that sounds great narrative, but give me some concrete. I've been thinking of, okay, so what could they have done last season to be better prepared for when the postseason began? And there's a few things that came to mind. Number one, look, they put Valimaki in game 4 and game 5 against Colorado. And Valimaki was great and was one of their better defensemen. And I think that top 6 with Valimaki in as opposed to Fantenberg was their best look. I would have gone to that earlier. And I'm not even saying would have gone to that earlier in the postseason. I would have gone to that early. I would have put Valimaki into NHL games earlier in the regular season so I could see where he was. So maybe game 1, and no knock on Fantenberg, he was very serviceable, but maybe in game 1, I could have had my best rendition of the blue line right from the get-go.
I'd say the same thing about James Neal. How many times did we hear people trying to convince themselves that he was going to be back after this break, or, you know, getting away for Christmas? And, you know, like, he was awful. And in the most important game of the year, they finally scratched him when I think it'd been pretty obvious for a while. There's a little more upside and a little more tempo with Austin Zarnik in that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
They could have gone to that months earlier.
And tempo and pace is what that offensive system's all about.
The other thing we talked about in season a fair amount is, why don't you know what Elias Lindholm is
and
as
that
a center
was
iceman?
Be my
like,
second,
are you kidding me?
My
you,
second concrete example.
Because when that top line dried up for 2 months and they kept rolling it out there, what did they have to go to as a plan B when they got to the playoffs? They didn't have one.
And it was very
interesting. They put the same buddy lines out there together for the playoffs when it hadn't worked down the stretch of sup 4 the Derek Ryan line.
Did you? I know that Peters addressed it in his end of season news conference. Did you ask him the question about Lindholm at center, or did he bring it up?
I can't remember what I had for breakfast today, but we did talk about a lot that Peters alluded to him in the future tense as a centerman, but then also, you know, he never really got used there. Even when we saw, was it Monahan was hurt for a couple of games? It was like Backlund moved up and they left like Lindholm on. I'm trying to remember what the shuffle was.
Derek Ryan moved up.
Derek Ryan centered the top line.
Yeah.
There was your chance to look at Elias Lindholm, the centerman.
Yeah. I wonder if things like that are what Bill Peters was referring to and when he talked about handling things different down the stretch.
What I took from that right away was Bill Peters learned. And Bill Peters had how many games on his NHL resume as a head coach in the playoffs?
To that point, zero. As a head coach, anyway.
And basically, some of the first things out of his mouth was, we're going to approach it very differently next year. So he's learned from, you know, did he get out-coached in that series? Probably. Does that mean he's going to get out-coached again? No. But it was his first bloody experience as a head coach. And I think they could have done a lot more, you know, how can we morph and adapt? If one thing doesn't go well, what does our next best scenario look like? And they didn't know. They didn't know what Elias Lindholm looked like as a center.
And
I mean, he did in Carolina, but if he's off that top line, who goes up? If he's playing the middle, who's moved from the middle to the wing? They watched a really ineffective top line for the final third of the season. Mm-hmm. Didn't really do much.
Very ineffective in the postseason when it mattered the most. And I guess, like, there are things that are concerning about this team in the playoffs that the coaching staff doesn't have any control over. Like, Bill Peters can't control who his number one center is. Like, he can't control that they don't have Alexander Barkov or Pierre-Luc Dubois or Nathan MacKinnon. So Bill can only, and the coaching staff can only work with the pieces they're given. And look, the fact the Flames don't have a number one center, bona fide, no questions asked in this league, is really nobody's fault. Those guys don't grow on trees. You got to draft them. And you know, they took Sean Monahan at number six overall, and Monahan is this team's number one center. And I think there are plenty who question whether or not he can be that number one guy to lead a team to the postseason, because we really haven't seen it to this point. But that's not really the coaching staff's concern. They're working with who they've got. So with what they've got, what do they do different this time around? And that's where I am fascinated to see how, because if the Flames are in the same scenario, and not identical, but if the Flames are going into the calendar year 2020 and we're going towards the trade deadline into February, and they're pretty home and cooled in the playoff spot, and all they need to do is play
500
hockey to finish off the year in a postseason spot, I feel like there might be some more experimentation this time around as opposed to what we saw. Because you're right, they were still winning games, and they were still doing enough to lock up number one in the Western Conference down the stretch, but they were doing it by having contributions from the fourth line. It was Derek Ryan and Garnet Hathaway and Andrew Mangiapane was the most consistent line. And so when you see trends like that, you say to yourself, okay, well, we're sitting pretty in the Western Conference. Let's change things up a little bit and not just stick with what's worked to this point.
Now, the interesting thing is we see this league is so volatile.
There's no guarantee that's what they're
you might be fighting for a wild card and have a better team built for the playoffs than you did last year. Right? That's just the nature of this league. We see so many clubs. Like, I always reference it. The Tampa Bay Lightning, 3 out of 4 years, went to the Eastern Conference Final. One of those 4 years, they played for the Stanley Cup. One of those, they just missed the playoffs.
Yep.
Right? They just missed. The Colorado Avalanche had one of the worst seasons we've seen in
decades.
Like, this era of NHL hockey, and made the playoffs year after.
Yep. With the same head coach.
The New Jersey Devils, 2 years ago, stunned the world as a team that everyone thought was going to be awful, made the playoffs, and we're right back to the bottom of the league this year.
Mm-hmm.
The Buffalo Sabres won 10 games in a row and were in first place, tied with the Tampa Bay Lightning, only to miss the playoffs for the eighth year in a row. Like, there's a lot of volatility here. So they might not be afforded that bonus or opportunity to play around with things down the stretch.
Yep.
But they also could have moved some parts around earlier in the year. Right? Find out more than one way to win. What are my two or three different lineups? That's the one thing we saw to some of these teams that are really good. Now, it didn't work in the playoffs for Tampa. They were always rotating lines. Mm-hmm. They're always rotating line mates.
Final point I will make on this, when it comes to how they might prepare themselves better for the postseason. I think at some point this season, whether it's October, whether it's January, whenever, at some point this season, they have to do what Boston did last year. Boston recognized fairly early on that they were going to be a playoff team, and they recognized that Tuukka Rask was going to be their guy in the postseason. And they eased off on Rask's workload. And I'm not saying that they have to do it identical in Calgary, but they eased off on Rask's workload and made it so that he was best prepared for game one of the postseason. And Rask was one of the best goalies, if not the best goalie
in the
postseason.
There was no one that had an offseason in net as good as Tuukka Rask.
So whatever the case may, so that was tailored for Rask. At some point, they have to decide, and I think with plenty of leeway left in the season, they have to decide whether it's Talbot or whether it's Riddick who's going to be their guy on night one of the postseason. And then from that point forward, they've got to partition their goalies and manage their goalies to make sure that whoever that guy they've identified is in the best spot to play game one. So that means more playing time or less playing time for whoever that guy is. They've got to make sure that they are beholden to that. And I don't know if that was ever the case. Like, I feel like they went back and forth on who their best option was last year.
Well, and I think there was good reason for that in hindsight. If you had a less than 100% David Riddick and suddenly not atrocious Mike Smith, right? Or a rounding into form Mike Smith as he played more. Yep. So that was a situation that, you know, wasn't one that was, you know, here's how we do it. We're going to play Riddick, who's in the breakout year, a lot less, and we're going to work in Smith. No, I didn't know. It was based out of necessity that that happened. There were a lot of really good tandems in the NHL that led teams to great places. Dallas was a wraparound save from Jordan Binnington away from being the Blues, essentially. They rode two guys. Boston rode two guys. And we saw some teams that rode just one guy that we really think is an elite netminder flame out. Tampa did it. Toronto did it. And these are just off the top of my head. There's obviously a lot more examples of both. But you're afforded the luxury of running a platoon if you got two guys playing well. Islanders did it. Dallas did it. Boston did it, on and on and on and on. They didn't have that option in Toronto with Garrett Sparks. They didn't have that option in Tampa with Louis Domingue, who only came in and played a real long run because Vasilevskiy got hurt.
Yep.
So you need two guys to play well to do that. So that's on Cam Talbot to bounce back, and that's on David Riddick to get himself close to where he was before the injury December 31. And if you have two guys, then absolutely you can do that. Mm-hmm. But if you're fighting for a wild card and one guy's awful, like if Cam Talbot has the year he had last year, coming up, you can't be taking starts away from David Riddick to get that guy work to rest Riddick. If you might be fighting for a wild card if Cam Talbot's playing and not playing well.
Yep. Yeah, if Talbot goes the way that the statistics usually show, then they'll be happy with the signing. But if last year was a sign of things to come, maybe not. Talbot's fascinating for me this year. I think I know what to expect from Riddick. I think I know what he's going to be healthy this year. And I would imagine it's very similar to where you have Riddick, because we're both...
He's probably a top half of the league starter in the NHL.
We're both pretty bought in on what this guy is capable of.
Been better every year in the league.
But what is Talbot? Does it allow them to make it more of an even split in terms of starts? I'm really curious on that. A couple of texts at 960-960 on the Glenn Moradi fan feedback text line. This says, I have to say, I'm proud of a 50-win team. I see it as a success. And that's fair. That's fair. I don't, because you win 50 and then you're out in five in the playoffs. The only way that we look back in hindsight as this season is a success is if they use that five-game exit in the playoffs truly as a tool to be better their next time there. And even then, you don't even know how much that plays into it.
Go look at the mid-90s. In 1993-94, the Flames won the Pacific. They had 42 wins. They won a lockout-shortened 48-game season with 24 wins. Like, does anyone remember 93-94, 94-95 as great years? No, because they got swept they got beat in the first round in seven games. They got upset by worse teams in round one. Mm-hmm. Nobody remembers regular season success over time. It's always the postseason. That's what this is all about. And that this team is now at the level in a competitive window or an area in that trajectory or that cycle of teams, whatever you want to describe it as. Just getting to the playoffs is not a win. They have to start doing stuff in the playoffs. That's how this group will be remembered. And to be fair, that's how these guys' careers are going to be remembered.
And this one reads, Coach's lack of playoff experience cost them big time. He needs to own this more. And I'll push back a little on that, because I think Bill Peters did own it after the season and said, no, we had to do things differently too. So Yeah.
I think he's better for it.
Yeah. And I think he's admitted that he is. And I think he will take a lot of the lessons he learned this past season into his second season as head coach of the Calgary Flames.